Right, hello and welcome to the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert. We haven't got Barney this week, but we've got two excellent substitutes, two veterans of the show at this point. We've got Kevin Fernandez on the show. It's been a few weeks since we last had you on, Kevin, but it's great to have you back. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, always good to be here. It seems like apparently the hosts of this program don't like getting me in for good occasions, because last time I was on, there was a little fact of João Pereira at Sporting, which we all know didn't go too well. And at this point, there's a 1-1, which I'm sure I'm going to have to fight someone who's also in this show about. But yeah, it's always good to be here and got plenty of content to get through today.
Yeah, and a man that knows an awful lot about being invited onto the Long Ball Football Podcast when his team's drop points is Mr. Andrew Batista. Andrew's back. Andrew, thank you so much.
Yes.
I promise the next time Porto win, you're going to be on the show. That's a cast iron guarantee.
I'll reach out to you next time. Next time they win, I'll reach out to you. Thanks for having me.
No, absolutely. Our pleasure. And as the two guys alluded to, plenty to get stuck into, including the Clásico. So it's going to be a bumper show. Before we start, of course, a reminder, as always, that if you've listened to the show a few times and you're enjoying it, feel free to check out our Patreon. It's £1 a month and it's a good way to get involved. There's a little bonus podcast on there pretty much every week. Last week, we did an hour-long bonus for the patrons all about the January transfer window. And there's other good stuff on there as well. So definitely check that out if you're interested. But fellas, let's get stuck into the Clásico, because they don't come around too often, but we were treated to another one this weekend as Porto hosted Sporting at the Estádio do Dragão. Sporting went ahead through some individual brilliance from João Kendo, who set up an unlikely goal scorer in Ivan Fresneda. But Porto, I thought, did very well in the second half to get back into the game. And perhaps despite some late chances for Sporting, were able to level the game through Dani Namar. So it ended 1-1. Quite a lot to consider in this game, particularly from Porto's perspective, Andrew. But I will come to you, Kevin, first, just to get your thoughts on the game, because, you know, these Clásicos, they often throw up a lot for the viewer, for the fans to take in, as did this game. But perhaps the one thing that I felt was missing from this Clásico compared to perhaps more recent Clásicos which Sporting have been involved in, was that perhaps there was a lack of quality in this game. I don't know whether you agree with that or what your thoughts were on the game as a whole.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, you have to look at the context of both teams, and I don't think you can expect the upper echelons of quality that we've been kind of used to in Clásicos, let's say, a decade ago. Not in terms of only individual quality, because obviously Porto just sold Galeno and Nico, they're two players who are two of the better players in that squad. Obviously, Galeno is very hit and miss, but when he is on form, he can create individual brilliance. He does contribute to quality in the final third. And it seemed like we were missing those sort of figures like Falcao, even like Jokeres, who missed the majority of the game. When he was involved, he wasn't at his physical peak, which is where 90% of his powers really lie, in his just absurd physicality. And that probably accounts for most of the problems in Sporting's end, because they had a better first half, as they tend to do with Rui Borges, but because of all of the injuries, players are being forced to play more minutes than they should, or return earlier than they should, or they have returned, they are well enough, but they're still getting back into the rhythm of things. And you create these three factors. You create a bench that isn't really prepared to come in and offer the same guarantees. And it's a recipe for disaster, because Rui Borges has basically been on a philosophy of trying to survive. His key phrase when he came into the club was, there needs to be attitude even when there isn't that quality, really. And that's pretty much what has been making Sporting survive. They're not living, they're surviving for most of the second halves. So I don't want to take merit away from Porto overall, because obviously Anselmi coming in, he's got a very difficult job. He's lost two key figures in that squad, very influential. You can say what you want about Gillian, who is kind of that 50-50 figure among Porto fans, but Anselmi has come in, he has changed structure, not having ideal pieces to put in there. They had very good moments. They took control of the second half very well. Obviously, it seems like their attack is very 50-50, and I'm sure that'll be extended onto in a second by the resident Porto fan. But to me, it seems like it's a very bipolar attack in the fact that you don't have anyone really composed in a final third. You have Samuel, who even himself, he's an amazing finisher, but even he can get emotionally overcome. And we saw it a couple of times in that match, which I'm sure we're going to get onto the one nearer to the end and everything that transpired near to the final whistle. But apart from Fabio Vieira, and he's far from his best self, he's the only one that you could expect to be very, very composed in the final third and have that sort of influence. Apart from Rodrigo Mora, and you cannot expect him to create everything by himself. So it's definitely fair to say that there was a lack of quality in this game. The players with quality, you did see moments from them, but they're probably the youngest players on the field. It's Giovanni Kender who had that moment, and Rodrigo Mora. But Rodrigo Mora, he didn't really have the supporting cast alongside him. Many times he would get onto the ball, he had a lot of actions on the ball, but he didn't really have a lot of outlets. And Kender himself, he had that one amazing moment when he goes past, I think it was Zé Pedro, and not remembering the other player, I
João
think
Mário. It was João Mário and Zé
Zamari.
Pedro.
Yeah, he has that moment, which obviously he does phenomenally there. But even the other probably best chances that Sporting had were through Giovanni Kender, and one of them is a one-on-one chance, which he does falter on. So, yeah, at the end of the day, it's a very heated game. It's very entertaining at times, but in terms of overall quality, yeah, the times of Lietsens or even Slimani, Falcão, Jackson Martinez, even the likes of Brahimi, yeah, they're far gone. And it looks like Porto are in a phase where they will rebuild, and they do have Rodrigo Mora and Samuel to build upon in going into the future. And Sporting, it looks like, kind of mirrors Anselmi in a way, which is they don't really have the conditions to put their best teams out and really put their philosophies into the squads. They're basically just making do with what they can. And it looked like that's how we got the 1-1. Both teams just scraping by, and in a way that they got their goals, really not a lot of opportunities, goal scoring opportunities throughout the game. Just your half chance here or there, and two of them somehow made it in. It's really that simple.
Yeah, it's a very good point, and I think it's a point that I want to expand on later. But the fact that two of the best players on the pitch were two 17-year-olds was really a fascinating kind of situation to watch. Andrew, I want to get your perspective on from Porto, because on paper, for me, of course, you can look at this as another draw. It's now only 3 points from the last five games. It's sort of 12 points dropped out of a possible 15. It's quite, it's a very, very poor run of form in the league from Porto's perspective. But the thing that caught my eye, and I think caught a lot of people's eye, was, of course, Anselmi's reaction to the equaliser, which was a jubilant reaction, really, to the goal. And I personally haven't got a problem with that at all. I know perhaps there were one or two Porto fans who maybe took it the wrong way, saw it as kind of celebrating mediocrity, because it was a draw, it wasn't a win. But, it was an important goal at a very kind of pivotal moment in Porto's season. My opinion is that perhaps if he manages in the right way, he can use this as a kind of launch pad to turn the corner for Porto to get back on onto better form. But still, when we look at this team play, I do just can't help but feel like there's so many limitations in the team at the moment. And to lose those two players that Kevin mentioned at the end of the window was quite tough.
Agreed. What I will say about Anselmi's celebration is, it's a very emotional sort of moment on the touchline. There's pressure throughout the game. Porto are throwing everything at them. It's the 92nd or 93rd minute. That ball goes in, you're going to celebrate. So anyone that kind of takes that in a wrong way, or it's accepting mediocrity or anything like that. Right now we're mediocre. That is the world we're in. Everything's kind of changing. We're in this huge transitional period where you lost Sérgio Conceição, which was very much, he was like a figurehead within the club, and he was there for so long. And then the Vitor Bruno experiment didn't work. Now you're trying something else. What I will say about the players so far since Anselmi's come in, and some of it is obviously new manager bounce, but there is an energy to this team. that is a bit different, and they seem to be more decisive in certain situations. It's a new shape, so they're all kind of learning what their roles are and what they're meant to do. And the attacking players, particularly, they seem to be better coached. They and so he's clearly telling them what to do and how to do it, which is much easier for a player. A player doesn't want to think too much unless they're some sort of messy type or something. They just want to know what they're supposed to do, especially in these system-heavy kind of teams. So far, I like what I see in that sense. As for the game, you know, it's just like Kevin said, first half was Sporting's. That first 25 minutes, you know, Porto were really under it. It was tough to watch, and I was concerned. I'll be honest, I was really concerned. But then that last half an hour or so, you know, it was completely like on its head, and Porto were sort of all over them. And I think that's kind of a metaphor for where the teams are. They, you know, one team is kind of surviving, like Kevin said, Sporting playing this more blue collar, kind of less shiny style of football. They don't control the game like we're used to seeing them, or the, like they used to under Ruben Amorim, but still getting the job done, having the quality, having the players. You know, not in this game particularly, but Trincão's been really good in the last few games. When Jokeres is still the best striker in the league, so they've got the parts to really go on a run, and I think they are still favourites for the league title. But as for Porto, Samu, what I like about Samu is, okay, he's got that passion and he goes overboard sometimes, but he runs after every ball. He never gives up. He's really tenacious in that way, and he's got some quality, even though, you know, he can be a bit clumsy. He does have quality. And then Rodrigo Moura was, you know, he's so good for such a young player, very composed. He's maybe not as composed as he will be in a few years, but that's just youth, right? You do stupid things, your decision making, you take shots when you shouldn't, which he did a few times in that game. But overall, I was sort of happy with the performance. I would have preferred the win, obviously. But I think they showed a lot of character coming back from 1-0 down against a very formidable Sporting team who can make it very difficult to sort of get back into games.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, I mean, Rodrigo Moura is a player I love watching. Just incredible talent. And you can see at times he's struggling because it's hard for a 17-year-old to do everything right at all times at the highest level, especially when he's kind of got teammates around him and aren't necessarily themselves doing everything correct. But yeah, a real positive for Porto, I think, is Moura's kind of breakthrough in the last few months, really, not even just the whole season. Kevin, I wanted to get your opinion on something that me and Andrew were kind of discussing the last time we were on the show, and in general, you know, we haven't spoken since Rui Borges came in, and it's about what kind of Andrew alluded to the change of style, and I know you said that Rui Borges said when we don't have the ability, we need to have the attitude, and I think that's very positive. I might caveat that by saying, well, under Amorim, they seem to have both. Maybe that's a bit harsh to say that, but yeah, it's kind of been it's Sporting under Rui Borges are very different. They're still getting good results, but obviously it's kind of, how do you feel as a Sporting fan looking at the team now? Do you think this is the team playing at the kind of getting the most out of its potential, I suppose?
I can't really answer that at the end of the day, because it looks like it's a situation where no one from the outside, even they're not going to know what's going on behind the scenes. And what's going on behind the scenes is every time that we get to a press conference before a match, we are asking Rui Borges, is this player available? How is his physical condition? And it's not to exaggerate and go on a tangent like Ange Postecoglou seems to do for Tottenham and be like, mate, I've not got the players, but I don't think Rui Borges really has the players, and the players that he does. I mean, we looked at the impact that Jokeres had when he came in. He was not himself. Anyone can tell you that. He was not running freely. He was not running as he usually does, because usually he was 110 miles an hour consistently. And he looked lethargic for his standard, at least. Harder was a lot more energetic, and perhaps Harder could have given a little bit extra. I thought he shouldn't have come up at the time that he did, but I don't know the physical state of Jokeres, whether he can give something against Dortmund, which is a match tomorrow. And he's trying to balance the necessities of the team now and what he can do to protect players that aren't in the peak condition for the next games, it's very, very difficult because at the end of the day, you have senior players who are out, like Pedro Gonçalves, like Nuno Sanches, who haven't played for a very, very long time now. And you have repeat injuries like Morita. You have the sporadic ones that come along, take players out like Jenny. Inácio missed a few games. Even Yuman has missed games. Simões come off injured and he had a very good start. But again, he's coming back and he doesn't even look himself. Like, I could go on and on about individual players who have missed significant portions of the season. You don't really remember a time where Sporting had their full squad available. So I do think Højbjerg could potentially rely on other figures, such as Alphonso Moreira coming into closing stages of a match, if you need a little bit of energy, a little bit of an impact to make up for figures like Kinda and Trincão, because they looked dead by the end of that match, even if it's using another one of the fullbacks to try and compensate. Maybe push them into a left midfielder role because at that point of the game, Porto were containing Sporting deeper and deeper into a fact where they couldn't even escape. Look, at the end of the day, I think Højbjerg could potentially put his trust in other players, but he's not been here for that significant period to really know. And the physical limitations are very evident. So if I'm 100% happy with Højbjerg, I wouldn't say so. But I don't think that any Sporting fan is really in a position where we can say, yes, he should do this, or no, he shouldn't, because it's very difficult to say. And obviously, Højbjerg cannot play all of his cards and say, oh, by the way, he's completely limited. Like, he's only playing because he has to. It's very hard for a coach, especially coming into a role such as this one, with all of the competitions he has to play. So, just based on the results, I think it's the best that Sporting fans can really hope for and be realistic about.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. And as you say, the result was a game where there wasn't perhaps the quality that we've seen from maybe we've been a little bit spoilt in recent years, especially I look back at some of the Amorim Conceição derbies, which I particularly enjoyed. Gents, I know it's well-trodden ground at this point, and I'm reluctant to even bring it up, but I do wonder whether either of you have anything you want to discuss regarding how the game ended, of course. I actually forgot the referee's name. I'm sure one of you will know it, but decided to send off two players during the same corner kick routine, i.e., before the corner was even taken. It was Matheus Reis and oh, who was the second player? Oh,
Do you
Diamande, yeah. Two players sent off. So, you know, these games give us so much. One of the things they often give us is these kind of refereeing debacles. And we got another one today. It did seem to me, I don't know whether either of you agree with this, but to me, it just seemed like a game where, do you know what? The players actually managed to keep their heads quite well. It was the referee was the one who actually seemed to buckle under the situation. I think in the past, perhaps I've given a referee the benefit of the doubt by saying, well, you know, maybe the players are the ones that instigate these situations where the refs are find it difficult to cope. But it did feel perhaps a little bit like the referee took this one upon himself. Yeah,
I
Kev, I
can't
don't know if,
disagree. I can't disagree.
yeah.
And I'm not going to defend Mateusz Kasz because at the end of the day, you don't need to go following the referee, complain saying that he needs to go to VAR. At the end of the day, if the referee decides to put that in practice, let's ignore the criteria whether it is consistently put in place. Mateusz Kasz doesn't need to do that. And the fact of the matter is, he went to the referee, looked like he was doing the signal for VAR, which obviously is a bookable offence, and then he goes following the referee. And I thought what they were saying on Sport TV is actually João Pinheiro gave him two bookings because he thought he was a different player the second time around, which is just hilarious. And I'm not going to disregard his influence in this situation. Like, João Pinheiro lost complete control of that match, complete control, and I think that's undeniable for any fan, even a neutral that was watching that match. But also with Dumand, again, they are not completely faultless. Why is he putting him in a situation where João Pinheiro, who we are familiar with, who is card heavy, which likes to be a protagonist in that fashion, you don't want to provoke him. You don't want to give him a situation where he could. And at the end of the day, you're in the Dragão. Those sort of situations will not be likely excused. They will not be just brushed aside by the fans. The pressure will be immense by the fans, as it would be in other one. At the end of the day, Sporting never wins when they enter that sort of game. It was a clear head loss by a couple of the players near the end. They're in a very emotional state. It looks like both teams seem to be fighting for their lives, not with the same freedom which they have played with in the past. So I'm disappointed with Hayes, which is a repeat offender. You mentioned even against Arsenal, he had a clear moment at the start of the game in the first few minutes. We could have easily been booked if it was the same referee. So I think they need to be more emotionally composed, more mature. They can't enter that sort of game because Sergio Conceição was a master of the dark arts at the end of the day. Sporting were, well, in this case, Diomande seemed to be being provoked a little bit by the player he was tussling with, and he entered that provocation and he came out worse. You always want to be the team provoking, not being provoked. So, yeah, I'm obviously Jean Pinheiro. All of the analysts have gone and said, "Well, okay, might have been a penalty on Kienda, might have not been a second yellow, this or that." He's not faultless, but I don't think that you can look at the Sporting players like angels either, personally.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you just said there. I agree with the red card, the Diomande red card. Anytime you sort of motion your head that way, like a headbutt, it's going to be a red in the modern game. The two yellows, I mean, two yellows are two yellows. You can sort of argue them, and refs can always just say, "Oh, they said this, they did that." But this is a referee that we know sort of makes it about himself, and he's done that in the past, a bunch of times, that he always sort of catches headlines that way. So yeah, it was just sort of an ugly end to the game. As for the penalty, do you think it was a penalty, Kevin? The Zé Pedro tackle, because I thought it was a clean tackle, just about got enough of the ball to not be a penalty.
I think it's too subjective to give it to VAR, honestly. I can see arguments for and against. I see that he got a lot of the play. He also got a lot of the ball. I'm not 100% sure on the official rule whether how much that really influences the call or not. But if the referee didn't give it, I certainly wouldn't give it to VAR because it's not a clear and obvious error, in my opinion, at least.
Nice. Okay, good. I mean, there was a meltdown online after the game. I don't know if you saw on Twitter about
There
that
always is.
penalty, but
It wouldn't
there
matter.
always is, yeah. But I'm glad to hear that the sensible ones sort of at least have a bit more of an even opinion about it.
Yeah, I thought the same as well, to be honest. It was one of those where I just didn't think anyone could say clearly
Yeah.
either way that it was going to be this or that. And so yeah, personally, I didn't have a
You
problem with
can
it.
be wrong and you can be right, either
Exactly,
way.
yeah. Yeah, but look, I think let's leave the ref chat, because I don't particularly enjoy it. Although I did, as a neutral, it did kind of spice up my Friday evening, somewhat towards the end of what had been a fairly tame game. My only final comment on this game would just be, obviously, a draw much more beneficial to Sporting than Porto, given the circumstances. And a point doesn't particularly help Porto if they're going to try and fight for the top two or what have you.
Helps Braga.
It does help, indeed, and I'm sure Benfica would have been fairly pleased. And speaking of which, gentlemen, let's move on to Benfica, who earned, I think it's fair to say, a hard-fought win at the weekend, as they beat Moreirense 3-2 at home. They did get off to a very strong start. Two early goals from Pavlidis, who God knows needs a confidence boost. But it did get a bit tougher as the game went on, not least because there were two very serious injuries in a very short space of time. Manu Silva and Alexander Barr going off with what apparently are both ACL injuries, which is very, very unfortunate to happen in one game. Moreirense, I thought, put together a fairly spirited comeback. They took the game to 2-1 and then 3-2. Never quite doing enough to get a point out of the game, and Benfica were able to hold on. Andrew, how do you feel about this this performance and result for Benfica, do you think it goes some way to kind of alleviating the pressure that Bruno Lage was under that we were discussing a couple of weeks ago? I mean, of course, had he lost, he'd be under more pressure. But, you know, you felt like a game like this, it's kind of the bare minimum to win the game.
As far as pressure, yeah, the result will alleviate some pressure, but I don't think they were particularly good by their standards anyway. It doesn't help when you have those four subs early on in the first half due to injury, but they were quite wasteful with the ball, which isn't really what you'd expect. The goals, I mean, the first goal, I don't want to go back to sort of refereeing decisions and stuff, but I hate those kind of penalties, and I know they're sort of penalties now, but those kind of penalties where it's kicked into the defender's hand from close range, they're almost always given now, but they just seem really, it's just an annoying one for me. I just don't like those kind of penalties. But yeah, I don't think they were super good. They still have that same issue. I mean, I feel like we talk about it every week. There's something sort of missing. They've got some players that do impress me from time to time. You know, I'm always impressed by Leandro Barreiro. I think he's such a hardworking midfielder. He really puts himself about, plays really well. We got to see a Bruma cameo, his first appearance for the club. He looked pretty good when he came on. But otherwise, I don't think there's much really to say for Benfica other than they won the game. They made a few mistakes. There was a few loose passes. One of them resulted in a goal, and that's sort of a thing that's happened to them a few times this season. And until they sort of sort that out, yeah, I think they're going to have a few more of these kind of tight games against the better teams, let's say.
Yeah, and if they're hoping that their action in the January transfer window is going to help them, then let's see how Andrea Belotti gets on. Anyone who listened to our Patreon podcast last week will know my thoughts on that one. Kevin, I know for a fact that Cesar Peixoto after the game was disappointed not to get anything from the match for Moreirense. I'm not sure to what extent I agree with that, because you know they conceded three goals, so they can't be too disappointed. But it was obviously a fairly positive performance for Moreirense. And actually, in my opinion, despite them not being in the most spectacular position in the table, I think what Peixoto has done with Moreirense pretty much for the whole season has been quite impressive.
I rate Peixoto quite a lot, really. I thought he's very much a manager, a little bit in the mould of Seabra, which is looks to have positive ideas, whether he's able to implement them, have that time, whether he stabilises the team in time to implement them. That's a different story, but he's definitely not a manager in the mould of the ones that consistently don't get results, really bring a project back a couple of steps to just build a solid foundation, grind out results in a more defensive, pragmatic fashion. He's not one of those sorts of managers, and he's plugging away. I don't know to what extent Moreirense really have conditions to build more with this squad. I think they've had better squads in the past with some very promising individuals, whether it be Gonçalo Franco, which obviously it does look like they're missing a lot of his influence in midfield at times. A lot of the time, it looks like Alan Zingle is really their sole focal point and source of inspiration. So I am moderately impressed by what it is. I mean, they're a team that say what you want, but probably off of club stature, shouldn't be in the position that they're in. So I'll always be impressed by a club that can consistently provide these sorts of results. It shows that they're doing something well, that they are stable enough in that fashion. And in the perspective of Cesar Peixoto, I mean, if you're looking at it from a neutral standpoint, you would recognise that Benfica probably did do enough to win the game. From his standpoint, I can understand why he felt a little bit hard done by. And I can understand why a team would go to study the Luge and think that they can get something from that game. Benfica do not impress me. It can be made by Benfica fans that Sporting Porto aren't impressing right now, but Benfica should, in theory, have the best foundations to impress. They've got the most expensive squad, and the manager's been there for the longest time, and his reputation is pretty much built on psychological bounces, those sort of purple patches, if you will. And Benfica seem to have the same issues as when they came in, the defensive transition. Obviously, now they're lacking even more individual quality. Di Maria getting injured, but Bruma not coming into the side, and that might combat it a little. But yeah, Benfica always looked like they had something missing. I thought Manuel Silva would provide that because he's very well balanced. He's got the defensive side that maybe Bajeiro has, but he can also get that progressive passing like Coxo is can provide and is sometimes a little bit unreliable. So I thought that would improve Benfica a little bit. But it looks like the personnel, be who it is, kind of just masks over the cracks because I don't think Benfica has evolved tactically as a side since Brulash has come in, really. I don't think anyone could say that they've improved as a collective. Maybe the individuals are more motivated and they've been put into a better position to do so. But overall, they're not really that impressive. And it's things like that that Morelos will go in knowing that they're a very well-drilled side, that they can get something from the game because they did prepare the game well. I think it was largely individual mistakes and lapses in concentration, which did give Benfica their openings. So, yeah, I'm sure Benfica will do fine the rest of the season, whether they get the title or not. I think it's going to be a case of how Sporting get along, really, the influence of their injuries, their consistency, because Benfica are in the best position. And in terms of what it is, at the end of the day, whatever position they're in, they're probably going to stay there or thereabouts. They're very stable, and that's probably going to be their selling point until the end of the season, really.
They also haven't they haven't won a game since the 5th of December. It's been a while since they've won a game.
Yeah, I didn't actually know that.
Yeah, so since the 5th, it's been a while. Was the last win was against Sporting. Apologies, Kevin. It was the last
Fair enough.
win was the 5th of December. They've been on a pretty poor run, few draws and stuff, but they're still 11th. So I think that early part of the season really helped them. Those points they sort of generated then.
Just that squad is just too plucky in a way.
No, agreed.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I think you're right as well to point out about that perhaps the thing that Marens are lacking to take him to that next level is the kind of creativity or that one player that they used to have to unlock the door. I mean, in this game I liked a lot like Benny played really well, and even I mean the two goal scorers
Great
really
goal.
Eva, yeah,
Yeah,
great
great
goal,
goal.
and Eva Rodriguez as well. I mean, that was a I thought particularly good goal as well. I mean, listen, Andrew, I'll spare you talking about Benfica because I know that we've discussed them a lot and we kind of go around in circles. But I think that in itself is kind of an interesting point with where Benfica are at the moment. We have been having a lot of the same conversations about them for quite a long time now, and things haven't really changed. We still see the same kind of defensive weakness. We see the same almost mental lapses in the players that seem to just be happening far too often. They haven't really resolved for me the issues they have in the squad to do with like the balance that they have in the squad and having all the right players to fit into the right places. I mean, again, I don't think we have to dig into Bruno Lage's leaked rant about, you know, feeling the need to play certain players with a certain price tag, blah blah blah. All these problems just don't seem to be resolving themselves. And with the transfer window closing, I agree with you, Kevin. I thought Manu Silva was probably the one positive signing that they made. And maybe Bruma, I know Andrew said he played well, so maybe Bruma will prove to be a shrewd signing. But, you know, with the January transfer window now closed, with Bruno Lage still in charge, and they still seem to have a lot of the same players. You know, it's not a team that at this point I think is in a great position to kind of storm to some kind of late title charge. And, you know, really what we're looking at is the title at the moment for me is Sporting's to lose with the way things are going. So, blimey, what a kind of pessimistic start to the podcast with basically the three top teams not at their best. But look, that's the kind of the way that the season has been going. And you know, the Portuguese league has given us a lot of great moments in recent years, especially with Amorim around, and in my opinion, with Sérgio Conceição around. So maybe this is kind of what we have to take this fallow period, perhaps with some of the top teams not at their best.
Well,
But
mate,
we
at the end
are.
of the day, if you think of it, the Premier League, Liverpool is the only one that you could say that are at their best of the
True.
big teams, at least. So,
True. I mean, football is always cyclical, right? You know, it's nothing ever lasts forever, and
100%.
I'm sure there'll be new kind of periods born in the next few months, maybe even next season. We'll have a more exciting stuff to discuss. But we are always, you can always look, in my opinion, to the rest of the league for interesting stories, great teams, good young players, good managers, etc. And I know one team, Kevin, I know that you've been looking at a lot, and perhaps one that we haven't discussed enough in recent weeks, Andrew, is Estoril. Because there were more incredible scenes in the posh bit of Lisbon as Ian Cathro's Estoril won their fifth league game in a row. They beat Boavista 2-1 at home. Two goals from, I think it's French striker, Yanis Begrawi, put them ahead. Boavista tried to fight back a little bit. Robert Bojnic, he's still there, if you remember him. Got a goal towards the end of the game, but it proved a bit fruitless. It did end 2-1 to Estoril. Kev, I know you've been at the very least looking at Ian Cathro a lot and Estoril, but it's an incredible run of form. It's been an incredible turnaround, and one to coin a phrase I saw you use, a real testament to why being patient with a manager can really yield results.
Exactly that. I made a big point of that just because pretty much two of the bigger feel-good stories of the league have been based on patience, where a lot of other clubs wouldn't have had it. I think I saw the statistic. I'm not 100% sure, but it was around the 14 team mark. They have changed their managers this season, about 13-14, which is embarrassing at this stage of the season, really,
It's
including
incredible.
the big three, which you don't see that often. He's won more games, and this was even when he won four games out of four, not five out of five. But he won more games so far in 2025 than he did in the whole 2024 of this season. So it
Wow.
just comes to show that a little bit of stability can do wonders for the squad. And he was pragmatic in a fashion. He did change the structure of the squad. He did place a lot more responsibility on a player like Holdsgrove, which I think makes more than enough sense. Having him in take control, really, of proceedings. Having a player like John Carvalho, as much as he does have the ability to be in deeper roles, a little bit more like Cogsu, I would say. The capability to play more of an eight, but really where they do shine is a little bit closer to goal because they don't really have the ability to do all of the defensive work as a midfielder. Those two have been just crucial. Their little positional tweaks, obviously, how he's dismantled the defence from pretty much a four to a five. And Wagner Pina, he has really been really, really impressive. I mean, I don't think anyone would have suspected that he'd be as consistent as he's been showing. But that's also been crucial for them. And yeah, it seems to be one of those phases where before perhaps everything seemed to be going wrong, because Cathro, I think we all remember that Sporting game where he all of a sudden played fullbacks on the opposite side and he switched to a five for the first time. And he a lot of tactical tweaks no one really understood because it basically just got rid of everything that they should have been doing until then. And that was kind of the wake up call, and everyone's thinking, like, how is he still here? What are you doing? But even in Scotland, he seemed to be misunderstood, got criticised long as soon as he got appointed as the manager of Hearts, which is interesting now because he's getting a lot of praise for all of his ideas and maybe being a little bit out of the box. But yeah, that's I'm never gonna shut up about a manager who perhaps goes through a period where he needs a bit of patience and gets it and he shines at the end of it. Because him and João Pereira Casapia, they had very bad results at the beginning and they're doing very well now. And look at where they're going, because they're getting very close to a team like Vitória, there and thereabouts. And everyone was talking about Vitória at the start of the season. And the likes of Santa Clara and Braga, they're not that far away. They can't definitely get to like the seventh, sixth sort of position, and I like that. I don't like that it's always the same sort of teams. You get a Moreirense every now and again in a Santa Clara, but then always seems to be Braga and Vitória there and thereabouts. It's refreshing to see these sorts of names around them.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Andrew, I think the last time we were on the show, we were saying Estoril is a team we need to talk more about. So I think this is a great opportunity because I think very few people would have predicted where they've got to now, you know, especially be, as Kevin said, fighting almost for the top six, which is really exciting. As I said, in Yanis Bulgari, they seem to have a really exciting striker. Only 23 years of old, so 23 years old, so a very good age, exciting player. And suddenly you start looking at their starting 11s, and you think, you know what? There's a lot of quality in this side, especially with the likes of Rafiq Gaitán coming back, João Carvalho on the wing as well, Jordan Holzgrove, Scheckter, Wagner Pina. Joel Robles in goal, for me, a signing that I thought was a bit strange, but actually seems to be embracing the project very well and looks like a leader on the pitch. So all of a sudden, and you know, as Kevin's so right to point out, probably to do with giving the manager time to build his ideas, we're looking at a team that's gone from looking quite weak and worrying about their future in the league to suddenly enjoying the kind of fruits of the manager's work and enjoying some really good performances.
Agreed. They're having a really good season. Just on this game specifically, the two goals were two pretty big mistakes from Bovichtis. They were kind of
Well,
gifts.
yes.
As usual.
So I will say that everything is kind of going wrong for Bovichta, and it's just making things way harder for them. But when you're sort of playing with confidence and you guys and the team's playing well and everyone's sort of doing the things they should be doing, those kind of things happen more often than not. You know, when you're more positive things happen for the team, even if it's the other team making a mistake or something like that. You know, credit to Shrill, credit to Ian Cathro, because he was under a lot of pressure. I didn't see this coming when we spoke about him at the beginning of the season. And we'll see how far they can get. It seems like they're not going to lose a game because it's like this kind of run doesn't happen for teams like Shrill. So it's really great. I'm interested to see when they play one of the big three again to see how they sort of get on, because now this is a different kind of Estoril to the ones that played them earlier in the season, because now they really have the tails up. I just want to touch on Bovista a bit. They tried their best, but they were pretty dreadful.
You were right to point
They
out the goalkeeper because I don't want to be harsh on anybody, but it was an all-time stinker of a performance from the
really
keeper.
bad,
It
really
was
bad.
really
It
tough.
looked he looked like it was his first like time being in goal or something. It was really, really poor from Cesar, especially that save from the header where he, as a goalkeeper, you should always like save away, and he kind of did a weird thing where he went ahead of the ball and then it went in. It was very embarrassing. And then there's the short pass that Berardi then sort of intercepts and goes around him and scores. So just a bad situation for Bovista. They're almost certainly going to go down. I don't want to be negative, but I'll probably put money on it now. They are almost certainly going down. I don't think they're going to be able to save their tails the way things are going. But yeah, fair play to Estoril.
I mean, Andrew, you're forgetting the breaking news that we heard this week. I mean, Bovista's fortunes are about to turn around because
No, I thought they were staying up. I
Lita.
thought they were staying up until you told me that. Now I'm certainly going down.
Oh, no. Well, Lito Vidigal is back. I mean, who would have seen that coming? Probably nobody, including Lito himself, would have thought he'd get another opportunity in the Primeira Liga. But Lito Vidigal is back. I mean, Kev, I think this is genuinely actually worth talking about, though, because it does kind of play into Bovista's wider issues, which is the quite bizarre nature of the way that club is trying to run itself. It's not just Lito Vidigal coming back as manager. It's a kind of string of very strange free agents that they've been linked with as well recently, including the likes of Levan Kurzawa, the former PSG left back. I even saw them linked with, can you believe, Marco van Ginkel, if anybody remembers that name from his brief spell at Chelsea. But they obviously didn't make any signings in the January transfer window. Cristiano Bacci resigned, and I thought he was insane for even taking the job in the first place, but actually I thought did quite well, given the circumstances, and seemed to be fairly committed to the job had genuine belief that he was going to be able to help this team. He resigned the day before this game, which is kind of a bad enough situation as it is. But I mean, we've said it so many times that Bovista are in a bad place and perhaps their time could be running out. And yet somehow they always seem to manage to turn it around. I don't know, Kev, if you look at this team, do you see any way of them turning it around?
Well, we said in the past, they've been very close to going down. They've survived.
Yes.
Let's be honest about this Borussia team. Against Famalicão, I know they had five subs. One of them is a goalkeeper. They are being linked now to Kurzawa, as you've just said. On the other, well, if he plays left back, at right back position, they had a player who wasn't even a starter for Barreirense. So I think that
Yeah.
kind of underlines the bizarre nature of this team. And getting Leeds Vidigalba, I don't want to be too rude about him. I'm sure he's a lovely guy, but I think his CV speaks for himself. It's 2025, let's be brutally honest here. Whatever hopes that they had were really in the manager, and he's just resigned in the fashion that you said. So clearly, the board couldn't even keep him minimally happy to see out the rest of the season and give that squad some sort of hope, because they clearly have it or had it. I don't know at what point it's going to disappear. But it's not a fact where they've just shut up shop and accepted their reality. They do give it their all. They're just underqualified. It's just, they just don't have the quality to do it. And it's a very poor situation. I feel bad for those players and that coaching staff, because they are not at fault here. It is underlying issues that have been found out at teams like Bordeaux. And Bobby is going to get to that point, and I just hope they can get to a point. And I don't want to be overly pessimistic, but given the track record here by the newly hired manager, by the board, and really we can think about Portuguese league history, I hope they don't end up like Beira-Mar, Naval, União da Madeira, historic clubs with rich histories which have ceased to exist. Even the likes of Aves, who literally won the cup, the Taça de Portugal, against Sporting in 2018, and a few seasons later, they literally had to sell the cup, or they someone stole the cup and they had to buy it back through an auction. Whatever that situation was, like, that is how this is going to go, and it seems inevitable, and it's sad. And I hope we can get to that point, and Portuguese football can get to an actual point. And maybe I'm going slightly off topic here, but we need to get to a point where these owners can't then buy themselves into historic clubs, take full control and run them into ruin in this way, which has happened clearly far too many times.
It's a very good point. And it is, I mean, I never take any pleasure in Bobish's downfall because it is such a historic club. And I mean, I know even Andrew is a Porto fan. You won't, this isn't something that Porto fans will be happy about either. It's not really something anybody will be happy about. So it is a
They
really alarming
won the league
situation.
23 years ago.
I know. Yeah. And I mean, I was looking back at their results because I remember they won the first game of the season. I think it was away at Casapia or at home against Casapia. And I remember so clearly recording the first sort of main podcast of the year with Barney. And we'd done our preview shows and we'd done our predictions and we said, oh, Bovista are going to go down. You know, they've got the transfer embargo. It's all looking terrible. They've got this manager that nobody's heard of. It's a disaster. They won the first game of the season. I remember looking at performance and thinking, like I've done it again. I've predicted Borussia to go down, and they're going to prove me wrong because they played so well. They were really committed. They were really there was so much effort from the players. And I thought, I looked at this team. And I thought this. They've got every chance of staying up with the way that they're playing. Anyway, that was 50% of their entire wins this season came on that day, the opening day of the season. They won one other game. I think it was in November against Gil Vicente. So, yeah, things have gone south very quickly and. Well, maybe not so dwelling it, but it's a pretty crap
You know
situation.
what? I hope we're wrong, and Lito Vidigal wins every game and he proves us wrong and they stay up. That would be incredible. And I don't think it's going to happen because of his CV, and we know sort of the track record. But I think a club like Borussia now, there's so little stability. You should be looking for a manager where there's going to be at least some stability. Lito Vidigal could walk in and then walk out again in a few weeks' time. You know, this is the
Absolutely.
kind of thing he's done in the past, and then you're just worse off. So they probably will go down. They probably need a reset. Hopefully they can stay solvent long enough, not go bankrupt. But yeah, anything can happen at this point. Who knows?
I mean, the thing that always amazes me is like these clubs' contact books seem to be so short. I mean, they've got, I know the owner's a bit of a dodgy guy, but they've got, it's club legend, right? Farry Fay, he's kind of a well-known figure at the club. He's like the sporting director. Does this guy really not know any other managers other than Lito Vidigal? I mean, if Lito Vidigal keeps Bovista up, it will be not only a great thing for Bovista, it'll be amazing for this podcast, thinking very selfishly.
I will come back onto the podcast and record a 5-minute apology to Lee Fidel if that
In a
happens.
Bovista shirt.
I'll
I
do
will.
that. I'll do one better, Kevin. I'll do an apology rap to a beat if you want. That's how confident I am that it's not probably going to happen. But yeah.
Well,
And
there
on
we
the other
go.
point, you'd actually be very surprised because Meriton legend Alex Bunbury, he's bought a club in the
Right.
Madeira District Leagues, and even that went insolvent whilst he was still in the District League. So it
Yeah.
actually happens more often than you actually think.
Quite far too often in this league, it is really the kind of the dark side of football in this country, which we've seen far too often. Gentlemen, I think we will leave it there. I'll give the listeners a glimpse behind the curtain. I did have penciled into the running order discussion of Ferenc nil Nacional 2. I'm going to be honest with you, that was purely for Barney's benefit. That's a Barney game written all over it. It had two red cards, two goals from a left back, and Nacional's new Japanese winger got himself sent off. So I think that was really up his street. I think we'll spare the listeners our
You can do it very
inane.
simply, actually. Ti
Go
avrei
ahead.
voluto good, to se mi recuperare. There we go.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Well, there you go. Nice and succinct. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining me again. We really appreciate your time. As always, we'll have links in the description of this podcast about where you can check out both of our contributors' work. Both contributors now for PortugalGold.net, which is fantastic. It's always good to keep it in the family. Just a reminder, of course, to check out our Patreon if you're interested in that as well. And me and Barney will hopefully be recording a bonus podcast going out slightly later in the week. So keep your eyes out for that. But yeah, that just leaves me to say thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Kevin. And yeah, we'll see you guys very soon.